The Human Podcast features weekly service audio from the Unitarian Universalist Metro Atlanta North Congregation of Roswell, Georgia. Please visit us at human.org.
Good morning, Human.
Good morning.
I'm Sasha Grainville, a member of this congregation, and on behalf of our service leaders, Donna Melcher and John Pruitt, Reverend Dave Dunn, who's on a much-deserved vacation, our Director of Religious Explorations, Lexi Tangi Brown, Music Director Alex Peach, and my fellow worship associates, and the dedicated technical team that is making today's live stream possible, I would like to welcome you to Unitarian Universalist Metro Atlanta North Congregation, which we lovingly call Human. No matter who you are, who you love, or where you are on your spiritual journey, you are welcome here. And some announcements now. Reverend Dave is on summer break. We have an exciting lineup of guest messages from members of our Human congregation. June's schedule is in Human Times and under the events on the new website. We also have a couple of adult enrichment offerings this morning. Sunday service reflections will begin about 20 minutes after the service, downstairs in Fellowship Hall, Room 3. Also, Music Share, the fourth informal Sunday jam, will meet in the sanctuary during second hour. All are welcome to come sing, play, and listen. The RE team is excited to remind you our summer programming is underway. RE activities take place with all ages together during 10 o'clock service. There's no play group and no classes after service. See your printed program for activities planned for June. If you haven't already dropped off your car for the car wash, they will also be taking donations that you can give in the Giveify app under the Human Car Wash. All of the proceeds will go to MCY programming. Please talk to Elizabeth Rohan outside after service if you have any questions.
May we be reminded of our highest aspirations and inspired to bring our gifts of love and service to the altar of humanity. May we know once again that we are not isolated beings, but connected in mystery and miracle to the universe, to this community, and to each other.
And now let us light our chalice together. We hallow this time together by kindling the lamp of our heritage.
This reading is by Ta-Nehisi Coates, and he wrote a book called The Case for Reparations, and this is his opinion about the book. What is needed is an airing of family secrets, a settling with old ghosts. What is needed is a healing of the American psyche and the banishment of white guilt. What I'm talking about is more than recompense for past injustices, more than a handout, a payoff, hush money, or a reluctant bribe. What I'm talking about is a national reckoning that would lead to spiritual renewal.
It was a beautiful spring morning in New Bern, Alabama. On the front porch, a warm breeze was drifting over my face and arms. Sun peeping through the pine trees, showing off the red dirt, and crabgrass sprouting up. I smelled cows and I heard a symphony of birds. My friends, the northern cardinal, the blue jay, the red-bellied woodpecker, the Carolina wren, the mockingbird, and the red-tailed hawk, and more. Friends from way back in Opelika, Alabama, in Monroe, Louisiana, in Chattanooga, Tennessee, and in Rome, Georgia, and now in Roswell, Georgia. They sang a beautiful song of the Deep South, and I felt good. It connected me to sweet tea, fried chicken, and apple cobbler with ice cream, to yes ma'am and no sir, and amen, hallelujah. And to all the generations of people that have lived and loved here before. That day, as I held those memories in my heart, I knew my tribe, my people, were the white folks of these southern parts whose families go way, way back. Back to the beginnings of this great country. I recognize that some of these people and I look at things very differently, and that's okay. I have come to learn that we all want the same thing, a good life for ourselves and for our loved ones. We differ in the ways that we think this can be best done, sometimes dramatically. I've traveled widely, and I always come home to the South simply because I love it here. I hold dear the beauty and the wonder of her places, from the Blue Ridge Mountains to the Okefenokee Swamp. And I feel tender for the great joys and deep grief her people know. Sometimes I think the land knows of the blood, sweat, and tears that have fallen here, of natives, of enslaved peoples, and of brothers. One of my father's favorite songs to sing us seven kids was Zippity-Doo-Dah from Disney's Song of the South. He had a great bellowing baritone voice, and I loved him so much. In the movie, the song is sung by a black man who appears to be fondly remembering the past. And for him, the past would have been enslavement times. I never thought twice about its racial implications, and I don't think my father did either. I still love the melody because it reminds me of him, but the meaning has changed for me. I see how ignorant it was to imagine ex-slaves thinking fondly about slavery. The deep meaning of that song would hurt anyone whose ancestors had been brutally treated. I have been rewriting my childhood thoughts and ask forgiveness for any time these thoughts or the actions that came from them have hurt any person. I believe that the song of the South is being rewritten too. While Black people have been living with the deaths of Black people by police for centuries, many white people started to notice in the past 20 years. For some, it was Trayvon Martin's death in 2012. For me, it was like a scary accumulation of names floating around in my head. And when the African American Policy Forum created the Say Their Names campaign, and people started putting all the names together and saying them one after another, it overturned all my sleepwalking. It made me want to be educated and think about things in a new way. I was crushed by the thought of young ones being killed. And I respect police officers with integrity and the incredible service they do. I learned about how the effects of racism diminish us all and how our white dominant culture has been translated into our justice, business, philanthropic, and educational systems of today. I could see better the tremendous inequity between racial groups. Since my family started off in the colonies and became landowners in the South, I started checking into my family's contribution to slavery and remembering my own history with African Americans. My large family struggled to make ends meet, even though my dad was advancing as a manager. We didn't have much contact with Black people except the maids that took care of us kids. I was bullied in middle school by some Black girls, and the 11-year-old me was scared of them. I went on to a mostly white high school, and then a mostly white college. What friends I did have were mostly white. Everything about my life so far was mostly white. After college, I started to work with a large company and began to meet professional African Americans. I got to know them as colleagues and bosses and employees. My respect grew, and still, I was clueless about the bigger picture of racial inequity in our country. In 2008, I had an assignment in Australia. One of my coworkers was an African-American woman named Kay. We became fast friends in exploring the Down Under and even took a holiday together to a luxurious resort in the Hayman Islands. One evening, over cocktails, our conversation veered into politics and racial inequity in the United States. She offhandedly said, "Yeah, I would like to get my 40 acres and a mule." This was a reference to the unfulfilled governmental promise of 40 acres of farmland and a mule to emancipated slaves. Even though I considered myself a forward-thinking person, I had a very visceral reaction to this. Internally, I was incredulous. How could a professional, well-paid person feel like they were entitled to this kind of restitution? 40 acres and a mule? That's real wealth. I'd like to have that too. Wasn't she equal enough? Didn't she have a good job and good prospects? Is she joking? Out loud, I said something like, "I thought that was all in the past." At the time, she brushed it off, but I couldn't forget it, and our connection languished. Fast forward to 2014, and I had the opportunity to do some volunteer work for the Oglala Lakota in South Dakota. Experiencing indigeneity made me want to explore my own heritage, my own connections to the earth before my forefathers came here. I traveled for 3 months in Europe and came back feeling very grounded and ready to dig deep into the whole history of my family. My sister had already done a lot of genealogy, and I am grateful to her for that. I had some place to start. Painstakingly, I went through tax records and probate records and saw my family's role in 3 generations of enslavement. It felt like a wake-up call to my soul, like my ancestors were just sitting on my shoulder, just asking me to help make it right. I've been very proud of my ancestors, one of them John Sevier, the first governor of Tennessee. And that's another whole topic. But honestly, I felt angry about such a thing disturbing my retirement, and I doubted I could do anything anyway. I knew I had much racist baggage to deal with. Each inner objection to making familial restoration required some undoing of familiar thought patterns and judgments. It wasn't comfortable or easy, and this became my journey to an anti-racist attitude and family reparations. When I spoke with people about making payments of redress and an apology for the enslavement in my family's history in Georgia and Virginia, there was some support and concern about honoring family heritage. I respect my ancestors, and I believe that we fully honor them and this great human family by being aware of and honest about the whole picture of history as it happened. We can learn new ways of making harmony from all of it, and I think those who have gone before us would like that. Other things came up too, like white people have done a lot already. How do we know when it will ever be enough? Why would you spend your money on that when there are people that you know that need money? Or, I'm not racist or wealthy. This has nothing to do with me. There was also genuine curiosity about racism and the concept of reparations. Also present, overload and apathy. I've got problems of my own. This is just not my thing. Or the usually unspoken fear of what will black people do to us when they have equal power? Or still, if black people gain wealth equity, does that mean I will lose my current standard of living? Perhaps the most difficult thing to encounter was arrogance from ones who do not understand how wealth and privilege is built and passed on over generations. I think this would be a fairly common set of reactions, especially in the South, but probably elsewhere too. I remind myself that I could have thought and did think these things only 10 years ago. It may seem strange that I never had a sense of guilt or shame about what my ancestors did. I knew I did not do anything wrong in those past times, so I do not have a personal responsibility for these acts of enslavement. That does not stop a feeling of familial responsibility and addressing the things that are still happening. I firmly believe that we heal this wound together in the inescapable network of mutuality, the single garment of destiny that Martin Luther King Jr. spoke of. Even though there is much to do, there is much to be hopeful about. As I begin my elder years now, I wondered how I could serve my people humbly and with love, and by that, help dissolve racism that we all live with. I came upon these things. 4 things. I practice listening and responding to people with different perspectives, assuming a basic goodness in everyone. I drop expectations about how others' journey will proceed, and instead ask that we become curious about the fears we have regarding racial equity. 2, I provide a small, real example of how one could address restitution for African American enslavement and continue to respect a heritage, even with a family history that includes enslavement and participating in Native genocide. I pray for the healing of our families. Racism is a silent partner in the very real Southern Gothic family, with its dysfunction, deeply buried secrets, and history of violence and abuse. I will humbly continue to challenge the idea that the effects of slavery are too complicated to repair, or irrelevant, or important because the time has passed. When you have cracks in your foundation, you fix them. I suggest that proper reparations includes closure for both parties, so it is not never ending. 20 years ago, my story might have caused a stir. Today, it is a small part of a flood of stories being told by individuals and organizations. We are realizing that there is more love than we've known still to be found between white folks and people of color. There is a growing recognition that the time has come to put this healing in the forefront so that we can start to sing a different song together. No matter what, it will take some change across generations. And I accept that some of us cannot change, and that is okay. I feel hope for the future when witnessing the young ones I'm privileged to know, and I'm confident that this world is in good hands. Until recently, there's been very little to guide our way in building good relationships with people of color. Now we have fabulous resources to help us with these questions and more. There is a racism story like mine, but different for every people in every region of the United States. So I ask, what's your story? Who are your people? And how can you serve them in dissolving racism? Coming to the Table is one national organization that can support you with constructive dialogue and next steps in your journey. And you can learn a lot by going to their reparations guide. They provide very practical ideas to get you started. Personal familial reparations may be appropriate for those with a family history of enslavement, and there are many appropriate actions that are not financial. For instance, you can support H.R. 40. This House bill provides for the study of reparations and would be most appropriate. This House bill provides for the study of what reparations would be most appropriate for African American descendants of slavery. Even though passing this bill seems paramount to getting things organized at a national level, California and New York have already passed legislation to create a reparations task force. And Vermont and New Jersey are considering it. Or, since we're UUs, we can check out our own UUA website for the 2022 Action of Immediate Witness regarding reparations for very specific steps that we can take individually or as a congregation. Or, as a footnote, I would say that there are many reparative actions that have been taken by this congregation and by individuals like Ann Bender, you can ask her about that later. And Family Promise is in its own way a reparative action. And Shelley's work with the Groveway community. Relatively speaking, I've come late to the need to respond to the racism in our society and my own white privilege and the need for reparations. Many UUs would say that in slavery times, they would have certainly been part of the very unpopular abolitionist movement. So, I offer these reflections to encourage engagement in a way that is appropriate for you and to ask another question. Could reparationists be the new abolitionists? And if so, how would that call to you now? Recently, I called Kay, my colleague, to belatedly apologize for my insensitive comment and to see how she was doing. We had a good, honest talk, and she graciously accepted my apology. Our relationship is on good footing. For each piece of healing between myself and someone else, a softening and a quieting of my being has occurred, and a beautiful note sounds in my heart. May we all ask ourselves, can a new song of the South arise in me?
Can you hear it? Okay. Here's a new song for the South. Don't get upset. This is not what you think it is.
And now, we extinguish this flame, but not the light of truth, the warmth of community, or the fire of commitment. These we carry in our hearts until we are together again.
May you hold a song of justice and freedom in your hearts. And may that flow out through your actions in the world. Go in peace and enjoy your week.
The Unitarian Universalist Metro Atlanta North Congregation of Roswell, Georgia, thanks you for listening to the Human Podcast. Background music, courtesy of Tim Moore from Pixabay.